Hey friends, and welcome to the Moving Mountains podcast. Moving Mountains is a place to hear true stories of modern day miracles told by ordinary people just like you and me. My name is Paige, and I'm joined here in Alaska by my dear friends Margaret and Bernadette as we witness accounts of how God has worked in people's lives in big and small ways. As you listen to these stories of hope, answered prayers, and unexplained phenomena, we invite you to allow this space to inspire your faith and even to help you recognize the ways in which God is moving mountains in your own life. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to season 3 of the Moving Mountains podcast. I am very, very excited because we have the most special guest in the whole world to me on the podcast today, my husband, Kyle. Say hi.
Hello.
So it's been a long time coming. Having Kyle on the podcast, there's just a lot of amazing stories that I hear about his work and his life every day. And I'm just really excited that he's agreed to share some of the ways that God has worked in his life and worked through his profession. But before we dive into all of that, I believe Paige has a very important question for us.
Yes, I do. So this is a question that I saw on social media like a month ago, maybe, and there's a whole article to it. So we can put that in the show notes if you want to read, but it's really interesting. So say you have a meeting scheduled on Wednesday, okay?
Oh, goodness.
And you get an email that the meeting has been moved forward 2 days. What day is the meeting on? Kyle, answer first.
Monday.
Monday?
Yep. So it was, you said it was Wednesday?
The meeting was scheduled for Wednesday, and then it was moved forward two days. All right, Margaret?
Well, I think Kyle's right, but I would have said Friday if he hadn't.
Friday would have been your answer, though.
Friday would have been my answer before Kyle answered. So I'll just stick with Friday. Even though I think it's wrong now, but that's okay.
All right, Berna.
I would say Monday as well because it's forward, but I could see how that email would cause a lot of confusion and people would go either way. It's the same thing with the time change, how every year it's like, it's spring forward and people are like, no, it's going to be this time. No, it's going to be this time. And you argue for like 20 minutes before everyone realizes what time it's going to be.
Well, that's funny because spring forward is ahead an hour. Or is it back an hour?
It's
ahead an hour.
Here we go.
Maybe I'm not wrong. Okay, I'm wondering. Paige.
My answer is Monday. And this article basically says, so the two answers would have been Monday or Friday. And there's no wrong answer, apparently. It's just the way you see time. So you
that's
guys can read the article. But it's really interesting because when I read this, I was like, obviously Monday, like how could anyone think Friday? And then I did a poll. I'm a part of this mom's group that has like 40 women in it. And I did a poll in that group and majority of the women said Friday. And I was like, what? I couldn't believe it. And then some of my friends in person were like, Paige, how on earth did you think that meeting would be on Monday? And I like, once I explained it to them, they were like, oh, okay, I could see Monday now. But it's just so funny how all of our brains work so differently. So,
yeah, that's cool. I love stuff like that.
So I'm not wrong, and neither are you.
You are not.
Hi, friends. We wanted to take a moment to say thank you so much for your support and encouragement that has brought us all the way to season 3 of this podcast. We are so grateful that our little homemade project has come so far, and we look forward to continuing to share these powerful miracle stories with all of our listeners. We consider the Moving Mountains podcast to be a ministry, and we give freely of our time, but do have limited resources, which has at times resulted in mediocre sound quality and production of our episodes. Since the beginning, we've had many people ask how they can help support us, so we recently decided to address this topic. One dream is to hire a producer to improve the quality of our recordings. Also, thus far, our podcast has been shared by word of mouth, thanks to all of you. But we would love to expand this ministry by advertising our podcast so that more people have access to the miracles recorded here. If you feel called to support this ministry, please search for Moving Mountains Podcast on Patreon.com or check out the link included in our show notes and on our Instagram profile. Thank you and God bless.
Well, Kyle, can you jump in and just introduce yourself to our listeners? Let them know a little bit about who you are, even though I feel like they probably know more about you than our average guests because I talk about you. All good things.
Sure. All right. So I'm Kyle. I'm Bernadette's husband. Originally from Michigan, grew up. I see Margaret fist bumping. Go green, but not blue.
Go blue. Go
Margaret
blue.
Has, every time she sees our children, she teaches Michael to say go blue as soon as Kyle walks into the room.
We have to teach him to unlearn all of that.
Pretty classic moment there during the bowl game. Sorry, Kyle. You can continue talking about Michigan. State that it is.
I'm not sure what else to say. I'll give a little bit more kind of history in the story here, I think.
You can just jump right in.
Yeah, so maybe I can do that, and that'll probably explain a little bit more of the background. So I grew up in Fowler, which is a small rural town in Michigan, predominantly Catholic community, about 900 people, agriculturally based, a lot of farmers. It was kind of a cool place to grow up, very heavily Catholic, like I said, and I was actually featured in the New York Times in 2014 because of the amount of priests and religious that have come out. Overall, in our tiny town, there have been 22 priests and religious, and the little town just next to us also had 22 priests and religious. So,
yeah. And how many people are in?
900 people.
So, wow. That's just to give some reference for like how many.
So I think just growing up, it kind of permeated everyday life. And we went to church every Sunday. Faith was openly talked about. We had a small Catholic school, but it was only fourth grade through eighth grade. But the public school was essentially a Catholic school. And to the point that I remember as a senior in high school, we were very focused on sports as well. And we lost to one of our biggest rivals in a big basketball game. And we knew that there was a little girl in town who was having brain surgery for cancer. And immediately after the game, the whole bus on the drive home just like said a rosary, and people, not everybody is Catholic, but the whole bus, you know, like we had just lost a big game, but it wasn't even the thing that was the top of our mind. And I remember as soon as we got to, back to town, everyone just got off the bus and just went to church because they were having like 24 hours of adoration for this little girl.
Wow.
So it was a cool place to grow up. And I think that really formed kind of like my trajectory in life, and we'll kind of, you know, see it unfold in the story here a little bit.
Awesome.
So kind of going through middle school and high school, wasn't sure exactly what I wanted to do. My brother and I, we started our own woodworking business. I was 15 and he was 14. And so I kind of thought that was where I was going to go. I didn't plan on going to college. Spoke with my parents and they both recommended at least going to college to get a business degree so I could run the carpentry business a little bit better. So that was where I was headed as a junior in high school. Our town was really tiny. Like I said, we had 45 people in my graduating class. So we only had two AP courses in the whole school. So I ended up my parents forced me to take the two AP courses. and so I took anatomy and physiology and had a great teacher. And that was the first time where I kind of realized my love for biology and science. Went to college and ended up eventually picking kind of like a pre-med major. Didn't really know what I was going to do with it. It was just kind of fumbling through. But the whole time I was kind of discerning the priesthood as well. I thought maybe after I finished undergrad, I would just enter the seminary. And it was in the back of my mind a lot, but I never felt super strong where I was just like, all right, this is definitively what I'm going to do. Had some direction from a priest and we were kind of just like chatting about my thoughts of the priesthood versus eventually I decided to apply to medical school, and he had just said, just apply to medical school. And it kind of took me by surprise, but I felt some peace with it. And so I was like, okay, I guess that's just where I'm going. I didn't second guess it after that. Applied to medical school and started heading down that road. Right around this time as well, I was actually diagnosed myself with a degenerative eye disorder, which really rocked me. And I think it affected my faith quite a bit. And even just prior to this, back in high school, my brother, who I was really close with, he got really sick, was hospitalized, and never really fully recovered. And so that kind of shook my faith a bit. And I think led me into this period of, ended up being like 10 years of pretty intense spiritual darkness during this time. And I never left the church, but I definitely developed like a lot of resistance every time I'd go to mass, and had a lot of like anger and frustration with God. I couldn't understand suffering. I couldn't like wrap my head around it. And it seemed like just kind of an injustice, and, you know, dealing with my own eye disorder, and then my brother, and then entering kind of the health field. It seemed like there was like this kind of dichotomy within me. Like I really wanted to help people and wanted to be involved in healthcare and work to heal. But then I was, you know, kind of battling my own illness and then the illness of my brother. So it caused like a lot of difficulty and tension with my faith, I would say, and led to a fair amount of stagnation. But during those years, I had developed like good friendships with people throughout college and medical school. And some of us had formed a prayer group, and we would meet. We were from different schools. We had met at a retreat, and we had met just kind of like happenstance and all got along really well. So we'd meet up together every 3 or 4 months and have a prayer group together. And a couple of the individuals were involved in the charismatic renewal, which I had never been exposed to in my life. And so, you know, a couple of them were speaking in tongues and, you know, had the gift of prophecy, and my mind was like kind of blown. One of the women had come up to me, and this was at the time when I was discerning between medical school and the priesthood. And she had just said something about like, you have this big decision, but whatever you choose will be the right decision, you know? And I was like, whoa, like what is going on here? Like nobody had ever, you know, like, it like just kind of like knocked me back. I'm like, okay, all right. And yeah. And so like, it was an interesting exposure to me, but then, over the course of the year, we had all continued to pray together, and I'd been more exposed to the charismatic renewal and the expression of the gifts of the Holy Spirit. And we were just having this routine kind of prayer meeting, and it's kind of funny because I still can't even explain it to this day. like my brain just can't really wrap itself around what happened. And my brother was there, and he still is like kind of equally confused. but like this, I don't know, like the Spirit just like came over me, and this, like, I was just like out of it. And, I was like, it wasn't like resting in the Spirit necessarily, but, I was like in this almost like trance. And during that, I had like received the impartation of the gift of healing. And so like afterward, I was like, oh, this is amazing. You know, like I'll pray over my brother and he'll be healed. And I know other people, and I'll pray over them. I'll pray over my own eyes, you know, and like, this is gonna be awesome. Like things are just going to really turn the corner.
Heal everything.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I was like thinking to myself when we were walking down the street and see somebody, you know, with a cane, be like, you're healed. You know, just like.
It's your superpower.
I have a question. When you had that experience and you received the gift of healing, was it just something you knew, or like, did you hear something?
It was like, the kind of words of prophecy. Someone had spoken it and was like very clearly saying, like, you know, you're receiving this gift of healing.
Okay.
I don't remember like all the details exactly about like what else was said, but that was kind of where, and like everyone heard the prophecy type of thing, you know, and the words. And so I just, yeah, it was kind of weird because after that too, I kind of felt like I wasn't sure what to do with that. I was like, you know, I wanted to make sure that I wasn't stagnating with a gift that God had given me. So I prayed for a lot of people. I prayed over a lot of people. And I, you know, I prayed with my brother a lot. Every time he'd come home from college, we'd pray together, and nothing ever changed. Sure. And I was like, man, am I like to have the formula wrong, or am not worthy, or, you know, am I messing this up somehow? And so I felt like there was a lot of internal pressure where I was like, man, I'm wasting it, you know, I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing with this gift of healing. And I wasn't really sure what to do with it. And I think that kind of intensified like the spiritual darkness as well, because I had already had, you know, a bunch of frustration and anger with, kind of the lack of healing with my eyes and the lack of healing with my brother. And then this, I was like, I thought I was supposed to have like this gift of healing. Like, what is going on? You know, it just seems like, nothing happened, and it seemed like almost like a joke. And then I started second guessing the whole thing, and I would talk with my brother like, you were there, right? Like this is what kind of happened. And he, you know, he's like, yeah, everybody was there. I have no idea. And we just couldn't really make sense of it. And so I kind of like put it on the back burner at the time. Didn't really know what to make of it. Didn't know how to utilize it. Didn't know what it meant. And so I was like, okay, I'll just kind of continue with my life. And at that point, that was right before I entered medical school. So went through medical school. You know, I continued to pray for people and I'd pray for my patients. Occasionally patients would, you know, seem like they were open to prayer. And so I'd pray with them. But again, I like during this whole time, you know, I'd pray for patients who had terminal cancer or patients who had, you know, major injuries or illnesses or something like that. And like nothing changed. And I was just like, I don't know, like this seems useless to me. you know, it's like, how can you give a gift that just doesn't work? And in retrospect, you know, now I can see, I was definitely blind to a lot of the ways that God heals. And I think that, God oftentimes works in subtler ways, quieter ways, and even longer term ways where, you know, the healing isn't necessarily going to be instantaneous, but you can see over the course where someone, you know, may have had healing and it may not have been a reversal of the injury, but they were given the grace to cope with it. And it changed like their perspective. And that was actually the healing that they needed. Mm-hmm. And I think in retrospect, that's kind of what I've learned, was that, you know, God certainly can heal in profound and abrupt and miraculous ways, but he's a God of humility. He kind of operates in the whisper and, in the mundane and the day to day. And I didn't realize this until later, you know, like the healing I was expecting was very different than I think the healing that ultimately ended up taking place. And it ended up being more a healing of my occupation and kind of the day to day and the mundane that I wasn't really expecting. Mm-hmm. And it took me, like, I couldn't really see that for myself. And I think it's always harder when we're in these moments, you know, we just can't see like what other people might be able to see. And so throughout medical school, throughout residency, I continued to pray for patients. Like I said, I developed a lot of close relationships with patients, and I still keep in contact with a lot of people and still pray for a lot of the patients that I met throughout all of those years. And many of them did not have a miraculous physical healing, but many of them have had, you know, like a kind of a spiritual healing in many ways, and have been able to have the graces and the changes of heart that I think it really took to handle the illnesses that they had. And
I have a quick
Father
question.
Michael is the one that actually, sorry.
I just have a quick question.
Mm-hmm.
You said you pray for these people. Were you praying like over them when you were with them, or were you praying that for them just separately? Like, was it hands-on prayer? Or, hey, can I pray with you? Or was it, I'm going to pray for this person when I'm saying my nightly prayers every day or whatever?
Yeah, it was both.
Okay.
There are a lot of times, like in the morning, I would say a prayer, you know, for all the patients that I would interact with. And at the end of the day as well, or I'd keep in mind like the people that I saw and pray for them. And there were certainly patients during that time who were very open with their faith. And so it was easier to engage with them in prayer. I would say definitely during medical school and residency, I was not as bold. And so I wasn't quite as open to approaching people to like actively see if they wanted to participate in prayer. Like if I saw they had, you know, a Bible and a rosary or something like that, I might mention like, oh, I'm Catholic too. And like, I'll pray for you type of thing.
Got it.
But
yeah,
I
what makes sense.
There were definitely people though, who I knew, and you know, I was trying to figure out what this like gift of healing was. And so, you know, family, friends, whomever that were around me, I would definitely pray over those people and, you know, like lay hands on and try to pray for physical healing. But I never saw like a reversal of an injury or anything. You know, listening to previous episodes of your guys' podcast, there have been some pretty incredible experiences where people had that instantaneous healing. And I think that was just kind of my expectation initially with, you know, you hear like a gift of healing, and I think we automatically just kind of go towards, oh, like, yeah, like this person has a bum knee, I'm going to pray over it. They're going to have like this sense or feeling or something that happened, and then they're going to be just like hopping around, you know, one moment later. And I think that's what kind of troubled me is, you know, my scientific brain and my faith brain were kind of at odds, where I was like, I should be able to pray for it and then see the physical reversal and see somebody recover. And I just never did. And then I was like, well, what is God trying to do here? Mm-hmm. And so I think that's where I had a lot of frustration as well, is I just had a lack of understanding.
Yeah. That, like, even when we met, like almost 8 years or 8 years ago now, you were kind of still at the point where you're like, yeah, when I wasn't sure if I was meant to be called a priest, I was really angry at God and still struggling, but I always felt this call to minister to those who are most in need, and like combined with this gift of healing. And it always, like at that point, it kind of seemed in your head like there was this pull of like, well, it's either like the priesthood and some missionary brotherhood where I travel across the world and I'm healing people who are in devastating circumstances, or I end up this doctor with like a normal life. And it was kind of this like either or, and not really understanding why did God give me this gift and like give me this missionary call in my heart, but like have me end up here. It just didn't quite like fit together yet.
Yeah. I couldn't
reconcile. And seemingly not healing.
Yeah.
Sorry, Kyle. You know, it's like, wait a second. And I can get that frustration. But I also think the thing that came to mind when you said, you know, there weren't immediate healings, and we can talk about this more later, is like, maybe that would have given you too much of an ego. And it was totally. Like, oh, look at me, I can do all these things, but you really can't, because it's God doing it through you.
Yeah.
Doctor walking through the hallway, like, bing, bang, boom.
There's nobody in the hospital anymore. Everybody's healed.
I mean, that'd be amazing.
But it's not our job to heal. Right. It's God's job to heal. So like you said, you never know, like 20 years down the road, whatever, or something did heal, but it wasn't what you were hoping or expecting. Mm-hmm. So I think I was just talking about this today, like when it comes to anything in terms of ministry, you know, you want to see the fruit, but we very often don't get to. And so we have to remember, like, God is bigger, God's doing his work, we're his hands and feet, but we don't always get that award of that person's knee has bent for the first time in 50 years. Like, so we have to surrender to God in that. And like, that's one of the things too, is like, we're not supposed to see and know everything on this earth. And so it's going to be so glorious please God, let us make it to heaven. But seeing the fruit of all of that, like, you'll see that one of these days. And I know we're kind of getting off track a teeny bit, but like, I'm excited to hear more from
really.
You. And I, but
we're going to hear, I think some of the stories Kyle's going to share is going to like kind of speak into that, how you get glimpses of the impact that God's call for your life does have. So, but I think you were starting to talk about Father Michael kind of opening up your vision a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. And even before that, so like kind of to Bernadette's point, I think one of the challenges that I had was really reconciling. I still had this kind of desire to be a, you know, this question of like, oh, should I enter the priesthood? And that was even going on in medical school and residency still. And I had looked up this group of physician priests, and partway through my residency, I was like, okay, I'll finish residency, and then I will enter this group of priests who travel the world and minister to, you know, these really remote and underserved areas. And it seemed like that was the only way I could really do both at the same time. And so,
sure.
I ended up obviously not working out that way, thankfully.
I'm glad.
And I think one of the first moments I really started to realize, like, okay, maybe it's not going to be this miraculous healing, but maybe it'll be like God utilizing the skills that he gives all of us. And each of us have a certain set of skills, and you know, those moments that we interact with somebody can be really profound. And that's kind of how God works through us. And I think C.S. Lewis said it something like, you know, we put on Christ and we're kind of the mirror of Christ to one another. And I think over time I started to realize that, you know, if we're putting on Christ in our daily occupation and our daily vocation, then I think that's where God is going to work. It's not necessarily going to be in these like profound miracles every single day, but it's going to be in using the skills that he gave us and us being open to him using us in those ways. And I think one of the stories that I kind of like started to see this early on was at the end of my residency. During all my vacations, I would just go to a different national park and backpack and try to see as many different parts of the United States as I could. And so one of my best friends and I flew down to the Grand Canyon, and we were on our first day of a 5-day hike. We were going to go down through, and we were following this super sketchy trail that's technically closed, but you can hike it if you want to. And you're going down these like really rickety wooden steps, and you're looking down like hundreds of feet because the steps are falling apart. We descended halfway down into the canyon, and we found a man and his wife were sitting there, and they were very, you know, they were young, they were fit. And we were just kind of chatting with them. And he just said, "My wife is super confused. I do not know what's going on." It was, you know, it was getting to be the heat of the day. But it wasn't super hot yet. It was maybe like 10 or 11 in the morning. And so I was just kind of chatting with her. And at this point I'd been in medical school residency. I'd done a fair amount of wilderness medicine and some search and rescue training. And so I was chatting with her, and I was like, "Oh, okay. You know, like, your first thought is going to be you're in the Grand Canyon. It's a desert. It's hot. Somebody's dehydrated." And so I asked them, "How much fluid have you been drinking?" And she was like, "Oh, I drank like 6 liters this morning to try and stay really hydrated." I was like, "Wow. All right. That is way too much water for right now. So you probably need to stop drinking water." And we had some kind of salty snacks with us and gave her some salty snacks. But she was still confused over the course of an hour or so. And so my friend and I decided to like evacuate them out of the Grand Canyon. And so we set our packs up in some trees and carried their packs out for them. And it took us probably 4 or 5 hours because she was kind of delirious and confused and, was very unsteady, which obviously wasn't safe in an area like this. So we spent the rest of the day evacuating her out. And I told them, you know, when you get to the emergency department, tell them this and this. And, they eventually called us later and said, "Wow, yeah, like that's exactly what happened. She drank way too much water and her sodium had dropped and she got confused." And we stayed in contact with them for a couple, like about a year or so. And they mailed us both a copy of like Disasters in the Grand Canyon. And they put a little note in there, like, "Thanks for not letting this be us." I started noticing, like, wow, you know, God put me in that moment, and it seemed there was nothing like extravagant about it, but he utilized some of the training and the knowledge that he had given me. And we were able to help get her out, get her the care that she needed. And, you know, thankfully nothing happened. And so I started to see that kind of in retrospect. And that was kind of at the tail end of my residency, but I was still really struggling with how to utilize this, you know, gift of healing. And thankfully, when I got to Alaska, I met Father Mike Shields, who is amazing and has provided me so much guidance and insight. And I'll never forget just kind of sitting there and chatting with him and kind of bringing this up. I'm like, "I just don't know what to do with it." And he just had this look on his face like, "What's the matter with you?
You idiot."
Yeah, just kind of like, you just want to smack him upside the head. You're like, "You dummy." He's like, but he said it so calmly. He's like, "Do you think it's your occupation?" And I was like, "No, can't do that." Like, that's way too simple. He's like, "No, I need to be like walking down the street and like healing, you know, deformed legs and like getting people who are in wheelchairs to walk again." And he's like, "I think that, you know, this is how God's going to work through you. It's just your occupation." And so, you know, it's like almost like a letdown in a way. You know, you're like, "Oh man, you know, I thought it would be like better than that, you know." But I think that's just like our own pride and ego. And so
our own expectations for how we think God should work.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we hold God to like this, you know, standard and expectation of how we think it should be, but that's not necessarily the reality. It was really transformative working with him. He's just been wonderful in our lives in so many different ways. And he kind of brought this up, like, you know, the gift of healing is your vocation. And, you know, this, you can't separate like this issue that I was having with separating, you know, this need to minister and serve through some form of, you know, formal ministry in the church or some religious order. And then that kind of opposed to my occupation in kind of the secular world. He was like, "Yeah, these are perfect. It actually goes really well together." And he said, "Your job is your ministry." And it's kind of embarrassing to say that I didn't really think of that. You know, it just seems, it's like,
I think it's hard, very human of you.
And, you know, I think at that moment I was like, "Oh, okay." But it didn't just end there. And so he really challenged me at that point to kind of treat it a little differently, you know, like be a little more bold and start to reach out to patients and to be that other avenue of healing, you know, not only being able to be there to offer the medications and the treatments that I was trained to do, but also to have that separate side for kind of the spiritual healing as well. And I started to be more bold and reach out to patients and offer to pray with patients. And it was never that I was like trying to impose myself or anything like that. I usually, you know, I made sure that the patient would be open to it and would just kind of ask. But the interesting thing was, of all the people that I've asked, you know, would you like me to pray with you? I've never had anyone say no. And, you know, I think it's kind of to the point that we all suffer physical ailments and mental and emotional ailments, but we also suffer a lot of spiritual ailments. And I think that a lot of us are seeking healing in that regard as well. And I was kind of surprised by that. I thought there would be a fair amount of resistance. You know, I'd be like, people be like, oh no, like don't pray with me, or, you know, that's not my thing.
I don't believe in God, or.
Yeah. But even, you know, even patients who are at their worst, you know, I think that's sometimes when God is closest to people, or most times it is. And patients are oftentimes, you know, very open to prayer. And so it really transformed me, for sure, in terms of my occupation, but also it was kind of the healing that I needed for like the past. You know, like I had prayed for literally decades for my own eyes to heal. I had prayed for decades, for my brother to heal, and nothing had really changed. But I saw over the course of years, my brother changed and I changed. And, you know, those things weren't the burden that they had been previously. And I saw that, you know, all right, this is healing. It's not the healing I prayed for, or expected, but God is still, you know, present and working here. And, he hasn't abandoned us, you know, just because right. He didn't fulfill that expectation that we had thought we were holding him up to.
Right.
And so, you know, that really over the course of, practicing, Father Michael continued to challenge me to be more courageous, to really start to see the day-to-day as my ministry. And it was really a life-changing lens for me to look through. And I think it you know, added more value to the day-to-day, which I was already, you know, praying for all my patients. And I could see the good that God was already doing in my life. But I really realized, like, God had given me the knowledge, grace, preparation, and skills, but had also given me the opportunity to be at the moment with patients when they're kind of facing their worst and going through those trials, which are oftentimes spiritually devastating as well. I started to also realize that my expectations of how God operates needed to be readjusted. You know, I realized that a lot of the healings are kind of mundane and ordinary and slow and kind of painful and oftentimes not really noteworthy. And they may take days or weeks or years to actually occur. But that God is still certainly working. It's just, he's doing it in his small, sequential, humble way. And it's just as important of a healing for patients, you know, from that spiritual aspect as it is from the physical aspect.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of started reaching out more, like I said, and I can kind of talk about some of the stories now, you know, in terms of what I started to see after that kind of change in perspective and the increase in kind of the boldness that Father Michael had called me to. And I think we had talked about the healing, you know, is kind of two different ways. I think the gift of healing that I've seen in my own occupation is the skill sets that God has given me, which I'm so incredibly thankful for, and putting me in certain instances at the right moment, at the right time, but then also putting me with the right people at the right time as well. So, you know, maybe I can just pause here for 1 second before we get into like some of the little actual kind of vignettes and stories.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say, like, being kind of a witness and also a partner in Kyle's growth, because we have struggled with a lot of the same things, like, you know, through these years of marriage, we're also struggling with praying for healing in my body, mm-hmm. healing to be able to have children. And so there's just a lot wrapped up in this, but just seeing the transformation in Kyle has been really beautiful, in witnessing him seeing his occupation as a vocation. And it's really cool because in my eyes, I've always seen the gift of healing that Kyle has. Even though that moment with Father Michael kind of turning it around really made a huge difference, but Kyle truly does have the gift of healing as a doctor. Like, he's a very special physician. It's not just a job. It's truly a ministry and a gift that God has given to you. And some of these stories that I've been able to experience kind of secondhand through Kyle, it's really obvious that, like, there are just these moments where, you know, some people might call it a coincidence, but, you know, like, for example, he's going to share one story when we were in rural Alaska for a random week and get a call in the middle of the night. And, you know, Kyle happens to be there and be able to save these babies' lives. So it's just really cool being able to see how, just working in one person's life, how the miracle can unfold step by step over a lifetime, and how, you know, your heart wants these instantaneous healings, but that the healing and transformation that takes years and blood and sweat and tears and testing of faith can be so much deeper and more moving and profound in ways that is just very different from an instantaneous healing. And it makes me even think of, you know, Stefano's episode, how he had this instantaneous healing from cancer, but then his miracle still took those years of unfolding. Like, you know, he talks about how he didn't even ask for the healing. It was all the people around him who prayed for him. So it's interesting that even when you do get those instantaneous, miraculous healings, oftentimes the more important part still is this part that takes the years of unfolding. And so, yeah, it's really beautiful. And I'm just grateful to have a husband who's been open to this. And instead of letting the confusion turn to the bitterness and anger and resentment, what I have seen is a beautiful miracle of healing and openness that's led to a true ministry, like through your work and through our life.
Well said. A thought I had, Kyle, was the beauty of, first of all, offering to pray for someone who you sort of know, right? You know them as a doctor-patient relationship. I would imagine as a patient, if a doctor said that to me, first of all, I would be floored. But also, I think you're seeing them in their humanity more so than maybe some do. And I'm not saying all doctors are horrible, but I think there are times when you have an encounter and the doctor's just looking at the disease and they're not looking at you. And I understand that some physicians are incredibly overworked, and this isn't a criticism of doctors, but I have had times where I've gone in and I haven't had to be in the hospital much, thankfully, but I've had times where I encountered medical people who are just like trying to get through their day. And then you have other people who sit with you and actually ask you about you. You know, my primary care physician's a Catholic woman, and the first appointment I had with her, I kept her over like 40 minutes because I just had an emotional breakdown and she let me talk. And so the beauty of just that extra step of, okay, I'm here because of your physical needs, but I also feel called to pray for your spiritual needs, is like, that's next level in my opinion. And I know that, I hope this encourages people maybe who are, you know, maybe too scared to ask that question. To, there's nothing wrong with asking the question. And like you said, mm-hmm. no one said no. You know, in whatever I had an experience profession. Where I was, what was that?
In whatever profession, right. You know,
it's if true.
You get it, if it comes up.
It's true. Yeah. And I had an experience that I could maybe share later where I, yeah, just was encountering these homeless people and doing this intake thing. And I was like, I asked everyone if I could pray with them because I was just inspired with the first person. And then I asked everyone after me and everybody said yes. And I was just, you know, it's just, it's like, I had to fill out this sheet of paper and it was It's like, I didn't want them to just be that information. I wanted them to be seen. And so I think even that little, which is actually a huge thing in itself, is transformative and healing for the patient, regardless mm-hmm. of what happens physically. So I just think it's beautiful and brave and desperately needed, because we all want to be seen. And when we're, especially when we're at our worst, or maybe not, I don't know. But to me, that shows another level of care of a doctor, is like, okay, I'm not just looking at you as a physical being that I need to, you know, I have to work on these things. It's, mm-hmm. I think it's beautiful and profound and courageous.
Well, there are many times when I'm not very courageous. So, you know, it's definitely a challenge trying to find the right way to bring it up. And I still haven't perfected it by any means, you know, trying to open that door and that conversation in that moment when people are, you know, suffering or having a hard time, and trying to figure out like, okay, you know, you don't want to just be like, they're like, man, my knee's killing. I'm like, I'll pray for you. And they're like, whoa, all right, that's not what I needed, you know? So I think I've had to try and navigate, like, how am I going to bring this up? Or is this the right moment or not? And there've been times where I was like, oh man, I really want to offer it to this patient. And then it just, the moment isn't quite right. It doesn't seem like the right avenue. But then the next day, you know, maybe it's the right time. And, I've definitely had a lot of moments where I've kind of wimped out too, you know, where I felt like, I was like, man, is this the right time? No. And I kind of convinced myself not to. And so it's still a lot of growth and a lot of, challenging myself to continue to be bold and offer it to patients and even, mm-hmm. you know, to myself. I think as a physician, I think it prevents like a lot of burnout as well, because we're ministering to the whole person. And I think when you start to just look at diagnoses and illnesses, it's easy to just get overwhelmed by the workload and the hours and the fatigue and everything like that.
And the sorrow of the atmosphere. I mean,
yeah, it can be devastating.
A lot of the stories when you come home don't end happy in a like earthly sense, but maybe the story is different spiritually. And also, you know, I think God keeps us humble in our gifts. Like Margaret said earlier, if you had just gotten the gift of healing and you started walking around like emptying out hospitals, it would have been a very different journey than the one that you have now. And it's even Saint Peter denied Christ 3 times right after he was at the Last Supper with him, saying, no, I would never do that. I love you more than anything, you know. And then what does he do? He turns around and freaks out like we all do. So it's just, you know, you're going through your own experience of your training in your ministry to Christ that his apostles went through, that all of us go through, that I go through when I'm awkwardly sitting alone and there's multiple people looking at me and I'm about to eat a muffin in public and I'm like, all right, here we go, sign of the cross. I'm going to say my little meal prayer. You know, it's like those awkward little moments can take so much courage. So it totally makes sense to me that when you're asking and being vulnerable in a healthcare setting, especially in this day and age when the world is so sensitive and politically correct and they're trying to take religion out of everything, it takes a lot of courage. So again, yeah, I just really respect you and admire that you have just committed to that and become more bold every step of the way. So
Kyle, going back to just what Berna had mentioned about the sorrow portion of your job, I was just wondering if your outlook, like since becoming a doctor, if your outlook on death has changed at all as a Catholic, just like, not to say that you're constantly surrounded by death, but I do feel like people in the medical field, you know, experience it a lot more than just the average person who's not in the medical field.
Yeah, definitely. And Bernadette sometimes makes fun of me for this because I do think about death a lot. And, but yeah, I think
not, I don't make fun of him about patients, but Kyle, when he contemplates his own,
yeah, just to be clear. Death,
yeah. Don't talk about that with your wife.
Yeah. Not making fun of anything about his job.
But yeah, I think, there is definitely a lot of suffering and tragedy and death, especially now, you know, in my fellowship, I'm working in the intensive care unit. Most ICUs have like a mortality rate around, you know, 20 to 25, 30%.
Wow.
And so every week we see patients die. And it definitely, one, I think it gives me a lot of gratitude that I see people who have immense suffering, and I just think, wow, God has taken it easy on me in many regards. Mm. You see the path that many people go through. And I'm just like, wow, I do not know how I would handle that. And you see some people who come through with just like such grace and faith and resiliency. And I'm not sure that I could be that person. So for me, it definitely, in a way, strengthens my faith to see people who are suffering very beautifully. And that doesn't mean that it's like easy by any means. And then also, you know, just kind of standing at the bedside of many patients who are dying, whether that's patients or sometimes even friends or family. And it definitely, I think, can take a toll on you because it's very heavy. But I think that with faith, it gives you that eternal lens that you're looking through, and you know it's not the end. And you can see people at the, you know, kind of final moments. A lot of people are seeking God and they're asking for chaplains and getting, you know, last rites. And I think that can be a really beautiful thing as well. And so it makes me think about my own death and in terms of also how I want to live my life on a daily basis. So I think having it front and center every day of work definitely brings it into my own forefront of thought. But also I think it gives me an opportunity to be there and minister with patients. Like I've been there, you know, praying for patients and, as they take their last breath, and there's a privilege of that. And I don't mean that in terms of like, I like being there when people are dying or seeing people suffer or die. But I think that being there to pray for somebody and to help in a way kind of minister to them in their final moments is something that I definitely have embraced. And it's something that it's not necessarily that I like enjoy it and wait for that every single day, but it's a part of my life now that I see as being very important to journey with people at that moment.
Well, and also Kyle has shared with me, again, not a criticism of anybody else in the medical field. And also I think there's a huge advantage in actually being called in faith to an occupation as a vocation, but Kyle has always taken the time, like when a patient has died, he spends time with that person. And if he can be at someone's bedside to be with them while they are passing away, he does that. And he's praying for them before and after their death. And it is very much a human being passing into eternity from that perspective. Whereas in the medical field, it's the more of the routine is, okay, let's declare time of death and then go ahead with the paperwork and procedure and move on. Again, not saying it as a criticism, but I think it's a really clear part of his call and his ministry of healing to be with people and pray for people in that way, particularly around death.
Yeah. And I was thankful to have a really great mentor in medical school. He was a great guy, a Catholic physician as well, who was incredibly compassionate and loving. And we were just chatting one day, and I remember he said, like, as part of your occupation, you're going to see a lot of patients suffer and a lot of patients die. And he said, you're going to be the person in the middle of the night who you're covering, you know, multiple floors and a patient passes and you have to come in and like, you've never met the person ever. He said, you can't become numb to that either. You don't want to become callous to that because, you know, then you are losing a lot of the reason why you're a physician. And so one of the things that he did, which I've kind of embraced as well from him, is no matter how long I've known that patient, or, you know, even if I just get called to the bedside in the middle of the night, he kind of had this practice of standing at the bedside and just paying a moment of respect. Sometimes patients die alone. Sometimes they're surrounded by family. But when you're in there and you can just take that moment and say a prayer for that patient, recognize that this is an individual who walked the face of the earth, who people loved, who likely suffered, who faced a lot of challenges, and tried to embrace you know, all of those things in that brief moment, but try to make it so that you're actually recognizing that, yeah, you know, that person, not just as like a task or a job in the middle of the night.
Absolutely. So, kind of in that same vein, like I know some of your stories are actually about working, you know, walking with some patients who passed away, but I think we'd love to hear some of the stories that you can see God put you in a particular place and time to be with a patient. So where do you want to start?
Thank you for listening to part one of this episode. We look forward to sharing part two with you next Wednesday. Thank you for listening to the Moving Mountains podcast. If you have a miracle story to tell, please call our hotline at 412-449-9609. And be sure to follow us on Instagram at Moving Mountains Podcast AK. We encourage you to subscribe, leave us a rating and review, and share our podcast with others. We'll see you next time.